Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
How to be a rapper. I looked up to the kingpins, players and trappers. Pimps with the jewels, cars filled up with hoes. The people with the product to help you powder your nose. It's like a blessing from God that I'm even still here. Remember when the narcotics officers would instill fear at the sight of them jumping out of that white ghost. Knowing that I'm holding this sack of crack in this hot toast. My reflections on growing up in a dope era. Freddie didn't scare me, but getting caught gave me night terrors. All the shit that we did to escape poverty. B&E's, selling D and committing robberies. Whole time throwing rocks at the penitentiary. Since elementary, they told me this where I was meant to be. All the while, hoping God had another plan. Make a way for us to take us back to the motherland.
I don't think we were supposed to make it out the mud, dawg. Nigga out here taking chances, we don't get paid, we gotta move out. Praying I don't get caught, cause I provide for more than pie, face card good, nigga, fuck my clout. I turned dirt to go. I'm in my penthouse having nightmares, so I kicked the door. But where I came from, man, we was taught to never fold. Every day for me a gamble, I just gotta roll. Hope I make it past these state lines, got peas in the dump. I don't think I'm supposed to be here, I be feeling like a ghost. Really put my all in, I be feeling like a ghost. Rocket Montclair, remember I can buy a coat.
Young just be cool until they write the check. My conglomerate, move quiet like Steph fighter jets. Don't ever let them shoot you down. Search and look who you found. Yourself, but heavy is the head chosen to wear the crown. I stood at death's door and handled it with class. I handled you with love when I probably should have killed your ass. We came too far to crash, so I digress. Look in my eyes, see the stress. No Kelly, but we the best. Heart pounding inside my chest. Blessed, but on some days I'm feeling cursed. My mom smiling down on me. My Aunt May and Robert Burst. Got a long list of angels watching. Hope I don't disappoint. This shit get way deeper than rap. I hope you get the point. I pointed you in the right direction while they pointed fingers. Before in the seance, as the weed smoke lingers, we pray not raise your heads. These words to raise the dead. Now listen close and analyze what's said.
I don't think we supposed to make it out the mud, dawg. Nigga out here taking chances, we don't get paid, we gotta move out. Praying I don't get caught, cause I provide for more than pie. Face card good, nigga, fuck my clout. I turned dirt to gold. I'm in my penthouse having nightmares, so I kick the door.
from where I came from, and we was taught to never fall. Every day for me a gamble, I just gotta roll. Hope I make it past these state lines, got peas in the dough. I don't think I'm supposed to be here, I be feeling like a ghost. Really put my all in, I be feeling like a ghost. Rocket Montclair, remember I can buy a coat.
Right, we are live. We are live at Off the Cuff Radio, episode 529 underway. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers, Core Financial, Jesse Boutique, and Da Vinci Clothing. I got my co-host in the building, T-Max with the facts.
What it do, y'all? Another fantastic Friday on the frequency of OTP. Shout out to our co-host, Spirit Rock Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. On the sideline, in the front page, with King Eric and I, myself, T-Max, for the facts, and you're live, never ready to go. What it do?
Yeah, man, first of all, we got a special show tonight, man. This is probably going to be one of our best shows, man. And first of all, before we go on with the intro, I want to send a big shout-out to Pittsburgh Pat for making this connection, man. But
absolutely,
these brothers right here, you heard with the track, they coming back full-fledged as if they never left. These guys were getting it in the mud, got signed with Scarface, put out a classic album in 06-07, and these guys been putting it down since. Independent-wise, keeping it grinding, keeping it steady pushing. And they on the live with us tonight, man. Still doing it in a major way and still very appreciated by us. Let's all welcome both Young Malice and Willie Hen from The Product to Off the Cuff Radio,
yep,
man. What's good, brothers?
What's good? What's good, fam?
Off the Cuff Radio. What's good with it?
Man,
what's
two legends. Look, another legendary chapter of the show, man. We are so happy to have you on. Thank y'all for coming on.
Thank you, man. We thank you all.
Yeah, appreciate you for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, it's been a long time coming, man. Go, you know, we've been trying to get at you guys for a minute, man. But just like I was telling, I was telling Malice earlier, man. We was trying to get you guys, but you know how those Facebook pages are, man. They got mostly number fan pages, and you have people just running them, and they ain't even y'all. So
yeah.
Big shout out to Pat for making the good contact with y'all, bringing y'all to the table, and to start this thing off. First of all, the new single was dope, and tell us what you got going on for the third and fourth quarter of 2022.
Oh, man, third, fourth quarter, man, me and Young Malice, man, we just knocking records out, man. You know what I mean? We going to drop an EP around the first, start the year off with a five-song banger. You know what I mean? Just to wet everybody's beak a little bit. You know what I mean? And, you know, we know everybody's been waiting patiently, so, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We got our foot on the gas for this last quarter going into the new quarter and the new year, man.
Yes, sir.
Man, absolutely. And, you know, good things come to those who wait. Obviously, everybody knows you all from, of course, the album y'all did 100 with Scarface 3 years back, which really, 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 you know, catapulted you all to. And we sometimes it's overused, but for y'all, it's so appropriate. It's so well-deserved. You all are legends in terms of working with a legend. They really, really made a legendary album for the hip-hop heads to really know it. But before we get, you know, before that happened, obviously you all were deep in the game, you know, of this culture, being a child of this thing we call hip-hop. I wish you both, all of us. I guess we do it like we always do by this time. Tell everybody how y'all started.
Oh,
yeah. Well, shit, man. Man, that's a long story from the beginning, huh?
We got time. We got 2 hours. Let's
y'all got time tonight? Oh, hey, cool, man. Cool.
We got
you know,
time.
I started off on the indie grind, man. Just recording, doing my thing in Jackson, Mississippi, bro. And ended up meeting Face at a little club out in Jackson known as Freelance. And we just linked up, man. You know, he heard me one night. We just linked up. And he invited me to go to Atlanta. And I was introduced to Block. I'm on Block ENT. And we started on the Boys in the Hood project.
Yeah, Russell Spencer from Big Block. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's my dude, man. Russ, man. Shout out to Russ. And that dissolved, bro. I ended up in Houston with Brad. This is when Brad was doing his thing with Def Jam South, man. And I ended up in Houston with Brad, and he ended up calling out a few dope artists, or in his opinion, who he thought was dope. And we all ended up in Houston, you know, including Will Hinn. And when the smoke cleared, you know, it ended up myself, Hinn, and Face. And you know, that's how you get this product thing, man.
Man.
Yeah.
I mean, coming out of Mississippi, go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to add to what Young said. I was in the Bay Area, you know, grinding independently, you know. And I was a part of a few collectives, one being the Do or Die Click, the other one being the Done Deal Family and the Network. And, you know, and after a while, you know, we all branched out and did our own thing. And in the midst of that, I was working with the producer, Tone Capone, legendary Tone Capone out of Oakland. He was right across the bridge from me, and we ended up connecting. And, you know, Face, Tone ended up letting Face hear some of my music. So they initially invited me down to get on the Ghetto Boys album, The Foundation, the last album the Ghetto Boys did together. So I ended up doing a little something on that album, I think on The 1, 2s, and 3s is the name of the song. And then from there, I got that call back to come to Houston when Young Malice and then when he finally made it to Houston after the Block ENT situation. Mm-hmm. Then I ended up being called down on that same trip. I think we were working on a soundtrack. Face was like wrapping up his situation at Def Jam South, I believe. I know he was still the president at the time, and we were doing some cuts for a soundtrack, a movie soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And then from that meeting of the minds, all of us, you know, I guess he decided he wanted to put a group together with me and Young Mal.
Yes, sir.
This is during the time, you know, both of course where you come from. We got to shout out, you know, of course, Jackson, Mississippi, and Oakland, California, you know, 762 and the 510 respectively. You know, the music legends out there from both of y'all areas and states are so distinguished. When you think about what was going on at that time in terms of where hip hop was, and you all working so diligently and, you know, just trying to get it out there, what was that trek like in terms of really, really making that, for both of you, making that impact locally before you actually get on? Because a lot of artists, a lot of people, they only see it after you get on with the major, but they don't see the work that goes on behind it. What's it like in terms of starting out, you know, writing those rhymes, you know, performing all over, you know, just getting in situations that may not work out? What's that trek like in terms of what people have to understand how this thing really works?
You got it on?
That trek is like, I'm going to say this first and foremost, a whole lot of free rapping. Mixed with some trapping. A whole lot of neighborhood support. You know, a whole lot of, you know, your guys and filling up them cars and getting on the road. Because, you know, we were carving out trails back then, at least as far as the Bay Area and San Francisco is concerned. we were carving out trails from the top of California to the bottom of California, all the way up to Canada, and, you know, doing those shows for $500, $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, feeding everybody off of those little, that little bit of change, and those same routes still exist that the newer artists from the Bay Area, local or not, are picking up 5 and 10 for. You know, we really paved the way when you talk about paving the way and why it's important to, you know, not diss the people who came before you. It's because of things like that, because we paved a lot of those ways where you guys are going to pick up that 10 and 15 piece. You know?
Right. Man.
Now, hold on. We think we got our Pittsburgh Pat on the line here. He just want to do a drop for y'all real quick. Pat, what up, Pat?
What's going on, Pat?
Yo, what yo, up, Pat? What's happening? What's happening?
Pittsburgh Pat.
I wanted to reach out to y'all. Some things came up, man. I can't really stick around that long. But, just wanted to say how, like, truly honored I had to have you guys on the show, man. Like, Malice, I told you this online, man. Like, that 100 album is one of my, I mean, that's how I got your attention, was I was just, like, listening to music and shit, and I'm like, man, there's so many, like, hidden gems in hip-hop that, like, that not 10 million people might not know about them, but the people that know those albums, they know that they're classic. Like, you know, I don't even have a favorite joint. That album was so well put together that you just let that thing play. And, you know, I went on to find other music of you guys and shit because that album sat so deep with me, man. Like, when I was locked up, that was one of the joints I had on cassette and bumped that shit every day in the yard, man, you know?
Hey, man. Thank you, Pat. We appreciate that, brother.
Hey, man. That's
I mean that, man. Like, you know, that album is, that's a timeless record to me, man. Like, I love that album, man. And, you know, I said I went on to, like, find other music you did and, you know, joint you guys in on compilations and collabs you did. Like, I remember Willie Hand, you was on, like, an Outlaws album or a Young Nobles album before.
Yeah, Outlaw Nation. That was Outlaw Nation,
yep.
One of you guys on, like, a Yuck Mouth compilation, too, and, like, Selly Cell and shit like that, man. But, yeah, I went on to, like, search you guys' music up and down, man, because to be able to even, like, hang with someone like Scarface throughout a whole album, it's just fucking incredible. Because, I mean, a lot of people, while everybody wants to be put on and that, a lot of people would be intimidated by that. Scarface is one of the best ever, no matter who you ask. And if you can't hang with them, then there ain't no point in doing it. But y'all hung with them y'all put together something that I consider a timeless classic, man. And I mean that. I mean, that's, you can ask Eric, that's how you guys are on the show right now, is because of how much that album means to me, man. And, like, I'm so glad you guys reached back out and came on the show before.
Hey, man, thank you, Pat. That means everything to us, bro. You know, we hear it a lot, man, and just to know that album really touched people and affected the right people. You know, it might not be in the mega millions, but the people that reach out to us, man, some of the best people, bro. You know, like some of the most, I mean, thoroughbred individuals. You know, it's not like just the mass population, you know, people. It's the people who really felt it, bro, who really got it, you know. And that means everything to us, bro.
I think that's more important anyway, man. Like, you guys could have easily wrote Scarface's name, made a fucking Shake Your Ass Club record that was hot for the summer, and then that was it. But instead, you guys made music that maybe the masses didn't go out and, you know, pump it like crazy or nothing, but the music meant something to the people that it did reach. And therefore, 15, 20 years later, you guys can still talk about it, still get interviews, still get shows, still get compilations, still work with other artists. Because that the music meant something to somebody. It, you know, we don't think of you guys and think, oh, they're the ones that made that bullshit club record that time. Like, you know, no, like, when your name's brought up, it's brought up with respect, man, because that album was deep, man, and it, you know, anybody that listens to that shit, if you don't feel that, man, then I don't know what to tell you, man, because that's a great record, bro.
Thank you, man. Thank you, brother. Yeah,
I appreciate that, man. That's, you know, I love it, man. I always say the realest guys in the world got hip to that album, you know what I mean? Because everybody, it's like the stories be the same, man. They always say, you know, the album got them through something, or they were playing it on the yard, or you know what I mean? That was part of their program. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's always beautiful to hear that, man, and that's what we do it for.
Yeah, man, it was actual music, man. It wasn't just like a beat coming on and y'all rapping. Like, y'all took your time with that, I could tell. And, like, you know, I even think those are some of the best, like, meaningful Scarface bars, like, verses and shit that he's ever spit, too. You know what I mean? I think that he, like, brought his, like, A game. And at that time, he was working a lot. Because, like, they had, like, the Ghetto Boys reunion at that time, the My Homies Part 2. Like, he was working a lot at that time. But I could tell that he took that project very serious, too. And,
Yeah, man.
I mean, that's a good way to get people to listen to it, but y'all are talented as hell and held your own, man, for sure.
Yeah, man, that album came out of love, bro. That 100 album came from us being around each other every day, man. Just real family, you know, waking up in the same household, you know. One of us sleep on the couch, the other one on the floor. You know what I'm saying? We was around each other every day, man, and it came out through the music. You know, we're not just three individuals who were just thrown together, bro. That was us being around each other all the time. You know, me and Brad was living together. You know, him and Brad, we all lived together at that particular time, man. So that's why that album sounds the way that it does.
Yeah, man. Like, you can definitely tell that wasn't like just, email me your verse, and you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, we'll make it sound right with the beat. Like, nah, you could tell that was, I mean, it's a very well put together album, too. Like, I've had this conversation with other people, like, you know, like Nipsey Hussle's Victory Lap. If you listen to it from start to end, the songs are kind of, they complement each other. And, you know, the song before makes the song after better. And that's something you can say about that album, because it's like, like I said, I don't even, if you named like the names of the songs and where they're at on the album, like, man, I couldn't even tell you, because I usually just hit play all and let that shit play the whole way through. It's just like it's like one long song to me. Like, it's one long record, you know what I mean? And,
man,
it's a timeless classic to me, man, that I will always show that album a lot of love, man. And I'm honored that you guys came on our show. I hate that I got to get rolling, man, but I hope y'all had a great holiday. Thank you for doing our show, man, and I mean, my co-hosts here, they'll carry on a great interview, I'm sure. And again, man, I really, really appreciate this.
Hey, man, no problem, man. It's our pleasure.
No problem, man. Thank you, Patty. We appreciate it, man. And
we can do a part two.
Respect, brother.
Yeah, man, we can do a part two sometime down the road, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Salute, T-Max, Eric. I'll see you guys later, man. Thanks for holding me down on this one, man. And I'll talk to you guys real soon, too. But the product.
Yeah,
before you guys get off the air tonight, though, please plug where to find all your music at and stuff, because I'm interested. So whenever I listen to this interview back, I'm going to go check everything out I can find from you guys. But salute, and y'all take care, man.
Hey, man.
All right, 100.
Take it easy. 100, brother.
Peace.
But what made that album so dope was, I think also Scarface wanted to prove that he could do it on his own as well when it came to finding artists and developing them and crafting a project for them. I think he had his back against the wall at that time, and he had a point to prove. That's what brought, I think, even like Pat said, the animal out of him.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, you know, it's always good to have some young blood and then have fellow artists who actually love the craft as well. You know what I mean? Faith loves music. If you ever get in there with him, you'll see that right away. He's musical all around. I mean, even as far as down to the instrumental part and, you know, playing the bass and, you know what I mean, producing and everything, you know. So it's like a dream come true from an artist standpoint, from a creative standpoint, and from the standpoint of a person who loves music. It's like you couldn't ask for anything more in that regard.
And
that's right, man.
I was just going to say, bro,
hey, not to interrupt, man, I just want to throw this in there, though, to piggyback what he said. A lot of people don't know, man, that's Faith singing on Hustle. That's Faith singing on Get Out, you know? Like, that's all him, man. That's all him vocally, bro. Like, dude was, I mean, he did a lot on that record, man. Just a lot of people didn't really know. Like, dude is music. And if you're ever in the studio with him, man, you'll see, bro. He'll bring the best out of you. We brought the best out of each other, though.
Man, I mean, but it's crazy because what King was saying about how Faith had a lot to prove being the president of Def Jam South. You know, fourth, you know, he bought a then unknown radio DJ by the name of Chris Lover Lover, who would later be known as Ludacris. He bought him there. You know, of course, you know, he bought Shaw there. In terms of his musical acumen, he's the Black Prince of hip hop, because just like Prince D, rest in peace, Scarface plays like 25, 30 different instruments, and he can play it fluently, from guitar to bass to drums. Like I said, he sings like a lot of people don't know how talented, you know, Brad Jordan is in terms of his overall talent that encompasses it. As you all went through the creative process of the album, and this is going back, you know, to the mid-2000s, where did you all feel hip-hop was during that time? And what was it like in terms of realizing at that moment when you all got to Def Jam South, like all the work that you had both did virtually and then coming together as a collective, it's like, wow, we're here. We made it.
Go ahead, yeah.
Oh, man. No, it was a beautiful thing, man. We felt at that particular time, man, the music had a certain sound, bro. And when we were in the studio, we were just trying to do something that was new and fresh. We didn't really have a direction with that album, you know. It was just us being around each other. Okay, man, let's do something fresh. Whatever come out. And that was our focus. We wanted to get the people something that they hadn't heard before. And it was a different side of Brad. It was a different side of what people were used to from me, and I'm sure with him also, man. We really had to dig deep to bring something fresh and a new sound. And I think we did that. I think we accomplished that. So the feeling was, for me, accomplishment. Just knowing that all the work had paid off and finally being around two individuals who were of the same heart as myself as far as the music go. They love the music just as much as I do. And that was the perfect combination.
Yeah.
You got me.
Definitely, you know, the cohesiveness of it all was, you know, largely inspired by, you know, just the whole group in general. We were blessed to have, you know, legendary platinum producers on the album, such as Tone Capone, John Beadle, you know, The Alchemist. You know, it's just, you know, being able to build with John Beadle and Tone Capone on a regular basis is just special in itself, you know what I mean? And just having that, you know, having all these music lovers in one place, people who, you know, a lot of people do music now that you'll hear somebody quick say, you know, I ain't no rapper, you know what I mean? I did this for the bag, you know, I didn't even think about rapping. I've been rapping for 2 months. But for it to be people who actually love music and, you know, have been doing it for years, it's a whole different vibe. We were on our own radar. We weren't even checking for what was going on in the world, man, to be honest. Like, you know what I mean? I'd have to look back to even tell you who was really cracking.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
You know, yeah, other than because the crazy part about it is what I like to say is if I could just set the tone, show a picture of what was going on during those times, you know, to answer your question, it was the hyphy movement up here in the Bay Area, and it was the drinked up, dripped out movement in Houston. And then you had the trap movement buzzing. So we found a place in between all of those three huge movements.
Man, and we got to talk about that history for a second with that, y'all, because when we look at where the game is today, you know, even when if we got to add in the snap rap movement in it as well during that time, the game...
Right.
For all of those different movements, and I got to say this, my brother King knows this as well as all of our listeners, I am such a huge Bay Area fan. The great Matt Gray, of course, E-40, Andre Nicotina, Keep the Sneak. I mean, that Bay Area movement in terms of the hype during that time was unbelievable. I mean, of course, you know, down in Mississippi, you know, you had David Banner represented down there. You know, shout out to our homie Young Bleed.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you all came from a rich musical history. And like you said, we all came together as a group. It's the energy, there's just so many different iterations of what we call that energy of essence to our music. We had the 80s, we had the 90s, and we had the 90s, of course, simultaneously with the East Coast and the West Coast. Like King says, the air was different. I tell the youngest, you know, we both tell them, you had to have been there to really understand it. When you saw all these artists coming out during that time, and you all were part of that, did you all know at the time how legendary you all would become making an album that would be mentioned in that arena, in that same breath, as some of the dopest, you know, projects ever released in hip hop history from all of those movements you all aforementioned?
Nah. That's the craziest part. That's the hardest thing to see. I mean, you have hopes that you make a splash, but you never know. I mean, I know how much I love music, and I've seen, you know, how long people play records that they really love, like, you know, 70s records, and you know what I mean, and the people who dig in the crates. But, you know, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see that far, you know?
Yeah. Me personally, from that time period, man, I knew what I felt. I knew that being in the studio with these guys, that moment was special. I didn't know how the people would receive it, but I know how I felt about it. And I know that I hadn't heard anything close to what we were putting together. And so for that to resonate with the people, man, And for them to reciprocate that love and that intensity that we felt when we were recording it, it's priceless. So we didn't know it was gonna resonate the way it did, but I felt it was something special going on in the studio while we were in that together.
Hmm.
Definitely, man. And you know how we also, staying in the East Coast, how we knew it was going to be a good album? Because at the time, we had the metric system by these magazines, like XXL and The Source. I think when Double XL gave you guys an XL, we was like, okay, this album might be, this might be legit here, you know, because at the time, journalism had credible writers, and people within the music knew the music. So it was like, okay, I never heard of these guys before. They gave them the XL, they put the stamp on them, we got to check them out. Come to find out.
Yeah.
It was legitimate.
The Source, Double XL, those were big parts. Those were definitely the meters that would get you interested, you know what I mean? We read more back then, too, you know what I mean? So, you know, I still got a stack of Double XLs and Source mags myself, you know?
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. I think Source gave it to my four mics. You just reminded me of that, man. They damn sure did give give people an idea of what to expect.
Yeah, when you think about the time of the what was going on and how the music business was operating, because you know this is before, because we've had the internet pretty much for about the past 25, even more, 30 years when we look at just how online, you know, technology has moved. YouTube had just began to drop, because YouTube, I believe, had dropped in like 2005, 2006. Facebook was pretty much moving. Well, you know, MySpace was a thing back in the day, but those that remember that.
Yeah.
Twitter hadn't come yet. IG hadn't come yet. And it was just really like nobody had really, like you all said, like King was saying, The game had really, really not developed from a technological perspective of what's the word I'm looking for, promotion. So it was really up to you reading the magazine, of which every Double XL I've had since the press, shameless plug, since 1997, and I had every Source magazine since 1994, shameless plug there as well. So you really had to read these to really know about what was coming. You know, who was dropping new heat, who was new in the game.
Right.
What was it like in terms of the marketing in general? What did you all notice in terms of how labels were actually moving, promoting it, and how they would get in touch with these writers, get in touch with these publications? Even going back to MySpace in terms of when they would have the artist pages. How did all that work during?
Oh, man. Go ahead, yeah.
As far as marketing?
Yeah, just in terms of what the metrics were, because this is like, I mean, it was just a different time. I mean, and I forgot to mention, you know, we forgot to mention Black Planet, you know what I mean? So this is like, you know, we're seeing the nascent beginning of what would eventually come, but it wasn't there yet. So it was really, there was no substitute for good music, which you all just jumped the bar with and just raising it. What did you all find in terms of how promotions went in terms of the how it was to put the album together and then the rollout in terms of the promotion tours, you know, the budgeting, placements in terms of every, how did all that work for y'all at that time? Because we're going to get into that later in terms of how the game has changed in terms of the metrics of where some of these artists are coming in.
Right.
Yeah. It was just, it was more complex. I mean, you know, like nowadays we're in an era where you can self-market yourself. And I wasn't even hip to Facebook until at least 5-6 years after that album dropped. You know, if Facebook was live then, I wouldn't know about it. MySpace, we were definitely during the MySpace era, you know, and it gave us a reason to learn how to, you know, how to play with social media, you know what I mean? So it definitely was a precursor to what was to come. But back then, you know, we had to do press runs, you know what I mean? We had to go do the interviews in person, take the pictures at the interview. You know, it's not just like posting a picture and shoot a video and that's it. We had to actually go be interviewed. If we did do a phone interview, we'd probably still have to do a photo shoot with the with one of their, you know, photographers on site. They'd probably send the photographer to do the interview. But I just remember doing the press runs, you know, New York, all the big markets. You know what I mean? New York, California.
It was just more hands-on, man. It was a more hands-on process, that's all. And never could we imagine, you know, right now, the game is instantaneous. You can reach out to anybody at any particular time. You know, back in the gap, though, you had to see a individual when you saw him. You know, you might have to get that ticket to the show to run up on your favorite artist. You know what I mean? Like right now, man, it's Instagram, it's Facebook. It's, you can actually reach out to these artists, and it's instantaneous. And that's kind of crazy, you know, like you couldn't reach out to Michael Jackson or, you know what I mean? And you can reach out to your favorite artist now, man. You can holler at them. You can chop it up with them and market yourself. It's wild right now. You know, the game is wide open right now, but it was just a more hands-on experience back then. That's all. Just a little different.
Now, you won't go get next to Mike and Prince like that, man. That's like touching
exactly. Hey, but look, I met Prince, man. I shook hands with Prince, man. Yeah, man, me and Brad met Prince, bro. That's a cold story.
Well, tell it.
Now, you got to give us some gems about that one.
Go ahead, man. Blouses. Nah, man, I ain't going to take y'all down that rabbit hole tonight, man.
Look, y'all know Prince the ball. Y'all get him on the court.
Blouses.
Pass me the damn ball, man. Yeah, man, Prince a cool dude, man. We what it was, man, Brad was invited to a Prince had a party in New York, and we were invited, man, and Brad and myself, we ended up going and hanging out with Prince for a little bit, man. That was a cool dude, a really good person. I mean, cool, man, like cool as they come, bro. Just, I mean, no ego, you know, just a good person, man. We had a good conversation that night, man. Great party, too. R.I.P. Prince.
I mean, but it's, man, how many rappers? Oh, yeah, tell that story, too. Yeah.
Go ahead. Man, that's going to tell the time. Go ahead.
But, I mean, but how many artists could say they actually met Prince and, you know, really just get to vibe with him and everything? You know, and I mean, tell us about some of the other people y'all met along the way, you know, in terms of when you all were really, like, getting out there, like, really, really going. Because, I mean, there's industry parties today, but even though it was going back, like, 15, 20 years, man, I tell the youngins today, it won't no industry parties like it was even back then, in terms of when you were really meeting. I mean, hey, tell us some more.
Man, you got it here. That's a long one. We going down the rabbit hole. Let's go.
We kind of rubbed shoulders with a lot of people during that time. You know, I don't even want to name drop and stuff like that, but, you know, I mean, from Nas to Kanye, you know, I'll just say that, you know, these dudes,
right.
Like, you know, Brad already has existing relationships with a lot of these people.
Right.
And, you know, Kanye is a big Face fan. Face was the one that really gave him his big break production-wise, you know what I'm saying? So once Face did that with Ye, that even made Jigga and Dame, you know, have to respect him a little bit more. So So, you know, you could see it in Kanye's face that he held a lot of admiration for Face in that regard, you know what I mean? And Nas showed us a lot of love, man. Nas showed us a lot of love. I ended up kicking it with Nas at a club all night one time, you know, smoking, standing on the couches, smoking weed, drinking Grey Goose vodka, you know what I mean? So it was
man.
He always showed a lot of love. He got on MTV and shouted us out. He told me he knew the album. Told me I used to listen to the album in the Maybach, riding through New York City smoking cigars, you know, and I was trying to, you know, be all cool and nonchalant, but you know, this is God's son. He, when I didn't react right, he grabbed me up. He said, "Man, did you hear me, man? I'm talking about I play y'all shit in the Maybach, smoking cigars, like, you know, I mess with the product, you know." He physically grabbed me, broke me down when he grabbed me, man. I had to smile after he did that.
That's heavy.
That's one of my favorite guys. So to be admired by you, by people you admire is a special feeling, man. It's lame.
Definitely. You all mentioned Kanye, and we're not going to really speak on all the stuff that's been going on lately. We're not here for all of that. This is about y'all, and of course. But we also want to talk about from a perspective, because a part of what we do on this show is we talk about seeing people on the way up. Kanye at the time was an up-and-coming producer. He was not the breaking Billboard, you know, Kanye album, you know, Kanye artist that we would eventually see a few years later. This is Kanye who initially worked, you know, on the infamous Syndicate album going back to 1998, Changed the Game. You know, this was the guy who was working on the Guess Who's Back off of Scarface's The Fix. This is the same Kanye who was working on Jay-Z's Blueprint. You know, this is he was at the time like anybody, just like Nas, you know, still trying back in the early 90s, still trying to get his foot in the game. What was it like to see Ye at that particular point early in his career in terms of still, you know, trying to really, really get out there and really ultimately break through? Did you all know the type of genius that he had, that he was going to become what he became?
Yeah. Man, I remember hearing Guess Who's Back on The Fix.
Right.
And I remember talking to Brad and telling him, like, yeah, man, you know, Brad already had the ear for it. Like, Brad is really the one who really stamped it and made sure that the world understood that Ye was a star, superstar.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? When I heard his productions, and then to finally hear, I remember hearing Through the Wire. I'm like,
right,
man, this dude is really amazing on the mic. And, you know, sometimes when you, because I did production for a long time, a lot of people didn't know that. And when you're doing production, it's like people want you to choose either or. They either want you to make beats, or they want you to, right. So, they, you
right.
know, either
we,
they
we
want
heard,
you to
that
boot.
Story. Yeah. Yeah, we know that story about how. Yeah, we know that story about how. And I didn't want to interrupt, but I just kind of caught the flow. But we know that story about how with Kanye about how hard it was for him because he really wanted to rhyme, and nobody
right.
would give him a chance. You know, he broke
That's
it
right,
down bro. On the last, I believe, the last song of College Dropout. If I'm not mistaken, and if y'all correct me if I am, because I know the song had initially jumped on the mixtape circuit when he dropped his mixtape before the actual album, but he broke down like literally the whole story of his whole journey through the industry. And, you know, I think he was supposed to be signed to Arista at the time, and Arista, at the last minute, for whatever reason, they decided that they didn't want to sign him. And he ended up coming back to Rockefeller, and that's who he signed with. But yeah, but they were saying, but nobody believed that he could rap. And he wanted to do both. And, you know, of course, College Dropout comes. Yeah, I mean, but when you're talented at both, why do you think the industry, like you were saying, tries to put limits on you in terms of that?
It's easier to control, man. Just the reason they put any of us in any type of boxes. Just like prison is a box. Your jail cell is a box. You got to fit you a place for everything and everything in its place. And that's the only thing that I could think, you know, is easier to control or just to limit you in general. You know, you don't want, you know, they don't want you dreaming too big now. Well, what'd he say? You still a what in a Benz? You know? That would be my theory on it.
Get too big and start being, become more so your own man and not really needing them, that's where they really start try to clip your wings.
Yeah. Yeah, because a rapper and a producer is a threat because, you know, that's two checks. Like the homie Two Techs. He told Two Techs.
That's a dope way, man. That's a good way of looking at it, man, because think about it. When you're a producer, you're on, and you're doing your own vocals and anything, you're keeping all the revenue yourself, because usually with a lot of these artists, they will have to pay this producer, pay that producer, pay that producer, and that's taking out all the budget. But you're doing your own studio, you produce your own
mixing and mastering, because, you know, that's ways that those have been historical ways of dipping into your budget. Well, we got to pay this much for mixing, this much for mastering, this much for studio time. You know, when you cut out two to three of those things now we're talking about power, you know, because that's where, you know, the hanger-oners and the quote-unquote vultures get their little extras out of, you know?
Yeah.
When it comes to dealing with the label, you know?
And that is the perfect segue, y'all, into the state of the industry today. Because we talked about how you all were getting in before social media became a thing. Now social media is seemingly everything in terms of how, I mean, we're having artists come in here. We don't even know where they came from. And it's like, now everybody, now, I mean, and disclaimer, as we say in all of our shows, we love social media. We have nothing against it. It's how we meet awesome people like y'all. You know, and so many others. So, you know, legends abound because of what we are able to do online. Thank God for it. And we are here for all of it. But
thank God
we've also seen, but we also have seen the metrics become artificialized. And I came up with a new word. Maybe somebody said it, but hey, it's new here. But it's been artificialized now. You know, it's like there's no real organic base of how these artists really develop a fan base. You know, it's like they just throw themselves out there, and then, you know, algorithms, you know, buying followers. And we're not even seeing a lot of artists really who are good coming in. I mean, we just got to keep it 100. There are not a lot of artists coming in who are really good at it. There's some that are great, and they had an algorithm. Some, they just want to be famous. Just by putting out whatever and getting online with it. When you talk about how the industry has changed, what have you all seen in terms of the metrics for how labels are picking up on artists, how artists are getting into the game, how artists are not understanding the business still about what it means to get of the process of getting signed and actually making revenue, and then most importantly, keeping longevity in the business. There's a lot to unpack, so we got to get it. Let's get it.
You want to kick it off, yeah?
I kick it off by saying this, man. It's all about views and likes now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they going by who has the views and likes rather than what's really dope. Like, what's really like the artists really put their heart into it, man. You know, and I'm not saying a lot of the popular, more popular artists right now don't put their heart into it. I'm saying there's a lot of overlooked young artists who really put their heart and soul into their music, and because the numbers and the likes aren't as high, these particular artists get overlooked sometimes, and that's the social media rush. Like, you can blow up overnight off controversy now.
Mm.
You know, yeah. We come from the era where you wanted to stay out of the bullshit. I don't know if we can say that on here, but...
Y'all can, look, say whatever the fuck y'all want to say. We are unscathed.
Hey,
my nigga,
hey, man.
Go ahead.
Appreciate it, bro, but we come from an era where we were taught to, hey, man, we got to conduct ourselves a particular way. You know, we've been had the muscle to create waves and start all the controversy we wanted to, man. But that's not how we move. So right now, you know, you can pick your phone up right now, man. Okay, this artist just got into a fight at the club. This artist just got robbed. It's all controversy. And that's what people are gravitating to because of social media rush, man. Rather than focusing on what we should focus on, which is the music.
Yeah, I think definitely, I definitely agree with Young said. And, you know, instant gratification plays a big part in it. And the other thing I noticed is the currency. There's a different currency that's used in the entertainment and hip-hop, especially hip-hop. And, you know, we've been used to fiat currencies all this time. But the new but then we had the cryptocurrency, but the other currency is clout. You know what I'm saying? Clout is an actual currency. I watched an interview earlier today with a young guy interviewing another guy, and he was talking about clout and clout chase. He talked about clout, and then they spoke on another person and what makes them hot, and he was like, well, the views, see, that's something that didn't exist 15 years ago.
Right.
Like, what the fuck is clout? If you asked us 15 years ago, what you mean, like, clout, the big shot in the street? I would have only been able to relay it to the streets. But now clout is something that almost exists in the cloud, you know, that we call the internet and the World Wide Web, you know. And it's like, you know, so let me see what this clout is like. Okay, you got a check mark? Is he popping? How many views he got? Okay. How many followers he got? Okay, how many friends he got? That's a whole new fucking currency, man. Clout is a new currency. So the clout is one of the nuances that I've noticed, and the instant gratification. The instant gratification is, you know, it's something I'm happy because I love to see people eating and shining, but you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't like to see people being, their relevance being judged based on clout. That's the one thing that, you know, sticks out too.
Yeah.
If you don't have certain followers, you're basically, I hate this term, is irrelevant.
Yeah. Like, I heard a young guy, I think it might have been
21
Savage,
trying to say Nas,
and he was talking about Nas.
Yeah, that shit was weak.
Right, and I think what he was doing was he was misconstruing the term relevant with hot or lit right now, on fire, you know what I'm saying? Because he almost contradicted himself within that statement by saying, he said, I think, not to quote him exactly, but I think he said something to the tune of he ain't relevant. He just got a loyal ass fan base. But
what
that's,
you say he has
like,
a big fan base?
That means
he's
relevant.
Right.
You have a loyal
he's
fan base because you are relevant. You might not be on the number Billboard charts. Maybe they're judging relevancy by who's on the Billboard chart or who's got the most followers or who's got the most streams. So,
well,
I think that that's what we're dealing with a little bit of that.
Now, he really wanted to say it with his chest out, but he had to throw in where he had his own base. Nah, say it with your chest out. You think he's irrelevant, period.
Yeah.
He was scared,
yeah.
though.
Yeah, man, that would have really destroyed everything he got going on, man. Because if you're a part of this, what they call the hip hop culture, if you're a part of this, then you got to know who made it possible for you to be where you at, man. And exactly. You'd even speak on Nas, you know, that's a no-no, brother. That's a no-no, man. That dude is one of the originators that made it possible for you to get the bag right now. So to even use the word irrelevant in the same sentence with a Nas, bro, you violating. You in violation, period. Period. Whether he used it correctly or incorrectly, he in violation for that one, bro.
When you look at that,
it's just a miseducation.
Yeah,
I think it's the words being used out of context. Definitely, like Young is right about that. Like you got to know better than that. And we're the only genre of music who does this shit. You know, the ageism,
right?
You know what I mean? Everybody else, when you see R&B singers performing with their contemporaries and the ones who came before them, you see the admiration. You see the bow down. You'll see Beyonce bow to Patti LaBelle. And Beyonce, she's the definition of relevant, right? She's the most lit singer on the planet, but she still bows down to Chaka Khan, Patti LaBelle, and Gladys Knight. So I wish we could take a little bit of that. I wish hip hop could study from that book.
I'm gonna jump in the cipher with this, y'all, because you all have just hit on so many great points. So I gotta drop my verse on it, because when we look at what 21 Savage did, number one, even Nas's, for some people would consider Nas's worst album, Nostradamus, smokes anything that 21 Savage has ever done, of which I am a fan of Nostradamus. A lot of people hated it. I liked it. Let's go further with it. Oh, what's this thing called a Grammy? Oh yeah, Nas has a Grammy. 21 Savage got a Grammy.
Right.
You know. Wait a minute. How long has it been since 21 Savage actually had a hit song, and he actually had to do a collaboration with Drake? I mean, can I keep going? I mean, where do I stop? Let's see. Nas has dropped
Nas wore a nigger shirt to the Grammys.
Yeah.
Do you think 21 would even have the balls to do that?
Well, I know he held up I'm a whore sign.
Oh yeah,
we didn't even date Amarose.
Amarose's boyfriend of a slut wall. He said I'm a hoe too. Well, I know one thing. That statement kind of aged well in terms of what you said on the shirt, in terms of the type of comments you made. You know,
Chris Peter Rapp. Oh, Doug Chris Peter Rapp. It's like Doug Christine tried to talk about Kobe on the bench.
Man, that's heavy, bro.
I mean,
hey,
let me say this though, bro.
Let me say this right quick, man. You know, that comment really bothered me, bro, because
it bothered all of us.
Never in a million years would I think a 21 Savage would be able to speak the name of a Nasir Jones, man. And I remember being in Jackson, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Riding to school every morning with my tape deck, man. And you know, I'm in Jackson, Mississippi, bro. We didn't have a lot of our own music and our own culture at that particular time. This is the 90s. Now I remember getting my hands on that Illmatic tape,
man,
and having that in my tape deck, riding to school every morning, man, just listening to Nas. It ain't hard to tell, and you know, it moved me. It inspired me to the point where now I'm sitting here having this conversation with y'all about our album. You understand what I'm saying? So when somebody speak on a Nas or a Rakim or a Face, or it's certain names that you just shouldn't touch, bro. The founders, you shouldn't touch those names, man. It's that's off limits in my book.
Unless you're bigging them up.
Unless you're bigging them up.
They don't hold them names sacred at all. Like, you know, you go to their community, you talk about the Rolling Stones is trash. You go see them hillbillies go wild on you.
And they'll go wild, bro. They'll lose it, fam. They'll lose it. Like, man, that was blasphemous for dude to speak on Nas like that, fam. That was blasphemous. Nas inspired all of us.
And you know what I just learned by listening to y'all talk? That
that
the instant gratification is also an attitude. You know what I mean? It's also an attitude. It's like if you don't fall into this algorithm of thinking, you know what I mean? You know, what's hot, what's relevant? How are you judging? Who are the judges?
Man.
Who you have to look at, you know what I mean?
What we're seeing now, y'all, we're seeing a lot of young brothers coming in because we're all older. So our understanding, and I want to preface this by saying this is not to get on an academic high horse about the history and the relevancy the history and how we're supposed to be scholars. But damn it, we've all been in this shit for a long time. So we know a little something. Starting with Nas, first and foremost. Nas was part of that second generation in the 90s of the dope NYC MC. He was part of that next generation. Him, Wu-Tang, Jay-Z, that was part of the second generation of New York hip-hop. Biggie, you know, and so many others that would come after that, you know. So what he would bring really inspired so many. I mean, we can't forget OC and all of them, you know, Big L, you know, I mean, that, you know, Fat Joe was part of that, you know, so it's like we're seeing this whole new generation of fire-ass New York City talent coming in and really, really, really doing it, carrying on the tradition. And Nas is still to this day, you know, one of the elite in the game. You know, this man is 48 years old, and he is rhyming somehow. Shout out to Hit Boy. They just found something that somehow Nas has just reinvigorated himself. This dude is rapping like he's in his 20s, and he did it on four albums in 2 years. When we look at hip-hop culture in general, hip-hop culture in general has always been inherently competitive because of it being a street-oriented culture. You know, it was just articulated through rhyme. But what we are seeing now with 21, and that was a very arrogant, very dismissive, very immature, and yes, a whole statement that he made. Because I'm like, dude, you can't measure your career by what Nas did in terms of it, because Nas actually found his fan base. It's like what everybody talks about the NBA and how it is now in terms of the eras, in terms of what these players would do now as to what they would do back then. And the era back then was a lot more physical. Hip-hop back then was a lot more grinding to get on. You didn't have the internet to kind of push you along. You know, you really had to drop dope shit and people really were fucking with it. 21 came along at that time kind of in that internet phase where, you know, you get a couple songs, you get a moderate buzz, and you move from there. So, and the problem is it's not just him. Are we here to bash him? No, he just made a stupid comment, an inaccurate comment, a careless comment. But does that make him a bad person? Absolutely not. But what is disturbing is there are a lot of other artists who are in that bracket who think the same way, that their thing is, well, the old school needs to get out of the way and let the young guys in. Well, nobody's saying y'all can't have a place, but we do expect you to do your homework and respect the legends that came before you. NBA Youngboy talking about he can out-rap Jay-Z. That's when.
No, he ain't mean that. He ain't mean that.
Oh, man.
And he said it because he knows he's not going to say nothing bad.
He ain't said it with his chest out. He said it behind an app. Then you don't even say that. That don't count to me. You can say anything behind the app.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta say with your chest out, man.
With your chest out.
You know, and he knows Jay's not bothered because Jay's saying, because you know Jay's like just so beyond all of this. Jay is chilling at home, being a husband, a dad, with a legendary resume. And Jay's like, huh?
With his chest,
okay.
That don't count.
Yeah, man. You know what I love about Jay, man? I love the fact that dude has enough money to you know, relax and not fuck with it if he didn't want to. But he still has that spark in him, man. He still has that hunger in him to just let everybody know he's elite with this shit, you know? And I love that about Jay, man. You can hear it in his voice, like, okay, yeah, you know, sometimes the money doesn't fulfill you all the way. And it's not the money right now. I know the money is big, it's a big part of it. But when you hear Jay Ryan, man, you can hear the hunger, you can hear he still got that spark in him that he wanna be the best at what he does when he in that booth, man. And you gotta love that. You know, I love that about the ones I admire, bro. I love that because it inspired me when I go in there to try to come with my best work. So, yeah.
What he did on that college God did verse. I think
man.
He got caught up in the moment because it was – now,
yeah.
Is it a hot J verse? Absolutely. Some people say it's his best ever. I honestly, I would put that probably in the top 10. I won't put it in the top 5, but it was a fire verse. I mean – and I think we got nostalgic because we have not heard Jay on an album in so long in terms of doing an actual LP. But I would tell anybody, no matter where you place it, Sean Corey Carter, what he spit on that was just, I mean, the verse I think itself was damn near like 3-4 minutes. And I mean, he literally bodied it. I was, by the time I finished, I was listening to it. I was like, oh my God. And this man is in his head.
But, bro, check it out. The bigger part of it is he doesn't have to do it. You feel me? Dude can go out to his resort, chill with his wife, and say, hey, fuck it. But the hunger inside him won't allow him to do that. It's like Mayweather right now. He could retire at any point, man, and never throw another punch, bro. But he keep getting in the ring. He keep punching. And that's Jay right now, man. So that verse was a gift. I look at that as a gift, bro, because it was so many, you know, he said so much within that period. If you listen to what he's saying, I know y'all really listening. He said a lot, man. He said a lot, bro. Yeah. But I could segue that with a Willie Hinn. If you listen to a Willie Hinn verse, it's so much said, a lot of people may overlook certain, but it's so much said. That's why I love him, man. I'm a big Willie Hinn fan. Why are we on here right now? Let me tell him. Hey, he don't know this.
Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a big Willie Hinn listener.
Oh, man, stop it, man. You know, hey, I'm a big Young Malice fan, man. You know
man,
what I
get
mean?
Out of here.
I can quote him anytime. You know what I mean?
Hey, look, we call each other, man, quoting each other's lines all the time, bro. And that's a beautiful thing, man, because a lot of stuff don't move me. So if something moves me, man, it sticks with me. And everything that this brother on his line right now says, man, it stick with me, man. So while we on here, man, shout out to Willie Hinn.
Hey, man, flowers
man.
To Young Malice, man.
But that's beautiful, man, that you all have maintained that bond and that brotherhood and that love for so long. Because we've seen situations over the years where even some of the most legendary groups, you know, and when I say this, we're not trying to diss or shade anybody. I mean, even when we look at the Wu-Tang, collectively, they're great. And we're not saying they hate each other, because they don't. But it's just there's been a lot of issues between them in terms of business and personal stuff that kind of really has gotten in the way of stuff over the years. You know, we've seen things with a lot of groups where they broke up along the way because there were just the business. When you all look at the business and being veterans in this now, what have you all learned in it in terms of what it means to, because a lot of people want to be famous and a lot of people will go to unimaginable lengths for celebrity, but they don't always understand what celebrity and the responsibility that it entails, you know, what it means. What have you both learned and how have you managed to all to kind of, you both managed to not let the trappings of ego and excess, you know, snare you?
Well, I think the celebrity and the fame part of it all is just really the byproduct to you know, putting in the hard work and everything, or at least that's how I viewed it. That's how it was viewed traditionally. But nowadays, celebrity is clout. You know, it's another form of currency. So you have people actually striving to just be famous or be the most lit or relevant online. Know, in the metaverse, in the you know, in the internet world, which is a whole nother world, is what you'll learn after you spend enough time there. You know what I mean? And I think that you know, that's basically one of the things. But I view the fame and the celebrity of it all as just the byproduct, actually. You know what I mean? If I can make great music and, you know, perform for my fans and, you know, have those intimate, heartfelt moments on stage with my fans, that would be celebrity enough for me, you know, and still go to the grocery store would be great.
Oh, paparazzi, do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, me personally, I never really wanted to be famous. Like, when people would hear me rhyme or whatever or hear my music, I would let them do the talking. I never wanted to be, like Bruh said, I never wanted the paparazzi following me everywhere I go, and I never wanted that, man. I know people who really seek that shit. They think they want that, and then when you get that, you realize this ain't all it's cracked up to be. When your privacy and when your personal life is now public, and every little thing that you do is now scrutinized, it's for the public now. If right. I could make the music and have my people that really mess with me receive the music and live comfortably without all that extra shit, that's what I would prefer, me personally. You know, I'm a Scorpio, man. We like our privacy, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. And one thing about it, too, the pressures of celebrity are so, we've been blessed. We have met so many people in the years we've been doing this show. And we talked to a lot of people off air. And one half of a very, very, very famous production duo, I'm not going to mention his name, you know, but me and him were talking a couple months ago, and he said why he moved, you know, out of L.A. to, you know, Las Vegas, because he was like, it's just so phony in terms of the industry and some of the people that we deal with. And it's just a
right.
lot to try to handle because it's so much where we look at Hollywood lifestyle, because it's just a universal term in terms of being in show business. It doesn't just mean California. It just means the Hollywood lifestyle in general. In terms of when you're meeting certain people, you know, you got a lot of fake smiles,
a lot of pats on the back that also have a knife in the other hand. You're also dealing with people who secretly may be envious of your position or the love that you get. And it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Not to say that the life is bad, but it's how you navigate yourself through all the smoke and then looking in the mirror and making sure you are still the same individual that you are when you first came in, and that mirror doesn't crack from a corrupted reflection.
Man.
When you think about all of this, the people you've met, the things that you have seen, and not getting into your pockets, you know, the money that you've made, you know, doing what you've done, what is important in terms about making sure, because people can get lost in it, from the finances of over excess spending to not necessarily, not saying this in your case, but not necessarily knowing how to handle it after, you know, maybe for some artists, when the lights turn off, when they don't have that celebrity like they used to. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, please, for what I've said so far. Please, y'all give me input on that, please.
Mm-hmm. Got it, Hindu.
I won't leave nobody speechless now.
I think financial literacy is definitely important, and you know, just knowing, like, when you're an artist, you know what I'm saying, I feel like it's, you know, I don't really make a backup plan to art, because I do it from the heart, and, you know, you got to believe you're going to win. So, but, you know, it ain't nothing wrong with having some investments, having financial literacy, talking to a financial planner at the very least, figure out your taxes, because a lot of people fall when they reach that height, you know, based on taxes, based on, you know, not taking care of the I, the R, the S before they get to spinning and flossing. You know what I'm saying? So, and definitely, you know, definitely take advantage of all the avenues that hip-hop provides for you, because there's different bags associated with hip-hop, and that's one of the nuances that I enjoy about the game these days. Is there's so many ways you see the endorsements. You see the Pumas, you see the New Balance, you see Adidas, you see these different brands working with hip-hop artists. And, you know, we come from a time where they were once scared to even align themselves with our brands. So, you know, definitely take advantage of all the bones that they throw your way. And, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to a financial planner, man, to make sure that you don't fall flat on your face, Jack.
Man, and that's such real talk, man, because you all came along at a time, not only from the music perspective of just dope shit, but also during a time where, you know, the bling era was still kind of heavy, you know. There was a lot of artists who was rocking heavy shit back in the day, you know, in terms of jewelry and everything, and the big cars and all that. you know, so we know y'all saw a lot of how some artists, of course, you're not going to ask me name names in terms of who was spending what, and maybe they got a little out there with it. What do artists need to understand about investing in the career, in terms of before they get in terms of coming in, making sure that they are in a proper studio, that they are paying the proper engineers, that they are paying the proper video producer, that they are actually getting good in terms of writing their rhymes, understanding there are 16 and 32s, you know, breaking it down, understand the song structure. When they decide to drop a mixtape, if they want to do physicals, how it is packaged properly and professionally, how to network, how to circulate. Instead of trying to blow all their money to look rich, which they have not gotten there yet. Or some.
Man. Oh, man, that's deep, bro. You know, right now it's kind of difficult to say, bro, because that particular era, that was a structure. And right now, the guidelines and the structure has been disbanded. You know what I mean? It's not like you could get on SoundCloud tonight, and if this shit resonate, you out of there. You can wake up in the morning and have millions of hits, man. So it's difficult to say what the structure should be because there is no rhyme or reason to it right now from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen the you know, just to throw a name out there, the Glorilla young lady, viral sensation out of nowhere.
Right.
And everybody rocking with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, immediately. I don't even know if people do bars anymore. Like, what you think, Hen? Like, what y'all think, man? Do people count bars anymore? Like, I listen to songs and I'm trying to see how many bars maybe the first verse may be and I can't even really figure out the rhyme or reason to a lot of the stuff I'm hearing, man. Maybe that, you know, maybe those lines have been deleted from the era that we come from, man, where structure to a song was important and doing things a particular way was important, man. You know, I won't say it's a lost art form, but it's the minority now. It's not the majority. When it was at one point, it's the minority now. You got it, Hen.
Yeah, and that what you said, along with, you know, it being more beat focused. You know, mm-hmm. what I mean, I think that you know, fitting into the mix has become more important for you know, programs, radio shows, and things of that nature. You know, the right BPMs. You know what I mean? Can you twerk to it? These things have become more important within, you know, what we're gonna call hot. What's gonna make it to the charts? You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, we used to center in on lyrics. We wanted to hear some game. You know, we wanted to hear some shit that we could learn from. Whereas right now, you know, the crowd, the fans want to hear some shit that's going to make them dance or give them a certain energy. They're expressing, the fans are expressing themselves through crowd participation with these songs. Like I used to say that, you know, because you hear everybody participating with it. You know, music reaches more ears now. You know, at a concert back in the day, you'd have half the people who might know all the lyrics and the other half are discovering a new artist. I think nowadays all the fans are hip to all of the artists. I've noticed that. You dig? Just looking at the Rolling Louds and, you know, seeing some of the younger artists, that's something that I've noticed. I wonder if you guys have noticed this too. Have you noticed the newer artists take the microphone away from their mouth a lot during a live show?
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all
mm-hmm.
peep that?
Right.
I haven't peeped that?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how they take it away and they just let the crowd, it's almost like they get caught up in the moment and forget their performance.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But then the crowd participation is so big, they can get away with it. But, you know what I mean? It's crazy, though. They're so new to this shit. They're fans. I feel like they forget for about 2 or 3 seconds that
hold on, you know, we performing this shit.
I'm on stage.
I'm on stage. Wait a minute. I ain't out in the crowd twerking.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's wild when we look at how the whole, how it's changed. When you're looking at even how shows are performing, it was really like back in the day, you really, really were about, you really had a stage routine together, you really had your whole, it was like, you literally would go, it's like a boxer who would be training. It was like Mayweather or Tyson when they were about to go in the ring, but about they would train for that shit for like a month and a half before they actually performed. Because
right.
You really, really, really were making sure that you had everything down in terms of remembering all your lyrics. If you were a group, you know, you had all your dance routines down. I know Beyonce, when she did her Super Bowl routine, they said Beyonce, because the Super Bowl was played in February, and I think they said Beyonce, because she, of course, they just announced it, but they had already let her know a couple months prior she was going to do it before they made the official announcement. So they had said Beyonce had already been, like, pretty much, I think, for, like, 6 or 7 months, they had already been in rehearsals for what was going to be a 30-minute performance.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of artists from back in the day, they were really, like, dedicated to doing their rehearsals, making sure that they delivered a great stage show. And it's really about the energy that you bring. It's about the enthusiasm. Like I said earlier, even with Kanye's latest craziness, I first saw him live back in 2004, the Northern North of Virginia. And it was just him and the DJ. And that motherfucker killed it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lil Brother opened up. You know, shout out Ninth Wonder. You know, rapper Big Pooh and Fonte. You know, because this is when they first started out. They were starting out with the listening. But, I mean, but when Kanye took the stage and did his set, Kanye just destroyed it. And we're like, he understood the assignment. And there's still some artists out there that understand the assignment when they do. You know, but you see some artists, they don't really understand. Like, you know, if people want to, you know, I mean, they got their backing vocals over their speech, and it's like, yo, it's like people want to hear you. You know, even if you might make a mistake,
right.
They want to hear you. You know,
that's
a situation. I'm like, yo, they can go home and listen to the album. There's always a thing in show business that they say that is a cardinal rule. Never have your shit sound the same as the album.
Yeah.
Want to keep it as spontaneous. What was it like for y'all in terms of, you know, once y'all really got out there doing shows, meeting the people, and going all over the world? What was that like when everybody embracing what you both were doing?
Got it, brother.
It was huge, man. I mean, you know, it was just, it's confirmation, affirmation that, you know, it was meant to be, man. You know what I mean? And like we said earlier, you know, the people who were, you know, we know how hard it is for a real street dude to just run up on another man and give him his props. You know what I mean? So for the guys that was approaching us, giving it up, it was so beautiful because these is, I mean, I'm talking about these is dudes fresh home from a bid. You know what I mean? Dudes who really didn't live the real life. You know what I mean? These ain't your average Joe Schmoes. You know, and you know, these is dudes who authentic dudes. You know what I mean? These is authentic dudes here, and you know, just giving it up. And you know they done been through. You know they done been through it. You know what I'm saying? So it always hit different. You know, our fans always hit different, man. And I'm talking about all over the world. I'm talking about Detroit, L.A. Anywhere we touched down, it was, you know, it was that same love and admiration. It was the same. It was the same vibe, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the people hear it, man. You can't fool the listener. That's number one. You might think you fooling the listener, but you can never fool the listener. They know what's authentic. They know when your story add up, man. Me and him, we never had to prove shit, bro. We never had to make a mockery of ourselves, get out here and, you know, just start some bullshit to turn the internet up so we can get in the algorithm. Man, we never had to do that, man. Yeah. And y'all the reason why we never had to do that. The people who rock with us and have stuck with us over the years, you know, we both been through a lot of wild shit, but we kept that off the net. We kept that in our private lives. You understand what I'm saying? That's what a lot of people can't do. They can't. They want to go to the internet with the type of shit we've been living through. Yeah. You feel me?
Yeah, we anti-clout. You know what I mean?
Hey, we anti-clout, man. Let's get those shirts made.
Yeah, yeah.
Anti-clout
shit, you
movement.
Know what I mean?
The anti-clout movement. Hey, we starting to hear tonight, man.
Man, and it's we're here for all of it because also to we got a little bit of time left, so we wanted to touch on this as well because it's kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier. A lot of you all, as far as hip hop has been going on, we talked about it being a hip hop, you know, music, rap music being a competitive culture. There's always been issues with people. That's just what it is. We've seen lately a lot of violence over the past 8 years with a lot of rappers getting killed out there. And it's a lot of youngins who are losing their life tragically, prematurely. You both are from the block. You both understand it just like we do what goes on out there. What do artists really have to understand about what that street life entails in terms of when this music thing becomes real? It is a business, and you leave block bullshit alone. And you don't go out looking for bullshit with other people.
Right.
Please. Go ahead, please.
Go ahead, yeah.
Personally, man, when you really come from that situation and you've seen the worst of the worst that the streets could offer.
Mm-hmm.
When you finally get an opportunity to get away from that, you should cherish it and take it to heart, man.
Mm.
When you get that opportunity to get away from the madness, like a lot of people get into the industry, and now they want to gravitate towards the madness. And that's the worst thing you could do because, you know, you go knocking at the door, man, you're going to get what you're looking for. And that's what this is the case with a lot of the murders, with a lot of the things that we're seeing in the culture right now. It's a death culture now because that's all they're preaching, excuse me. But that's what's being preached to the people. That's what you're going in the studio making. You're preaching death.
Like the Bible says, there's power, life, and death in the tongue.
Exactly, man. It's the energy. It's the energy that you create, that the artist is creating, that's manifesting itself in their lives. So if you make a song that inspires, you can go to the Still Here song that y'all played, and we thank y'all for playing that at the top of the show, man. If you go to Still Here, if you listen to the lyrics, if you listen to most of our songs come from an omniscient perspective.
Mm.
We're just narrating, and we're trying to give it to you from both sides. Some people only tell one side. Okay, we want to talk about the shootout. Okay, what happened after the shootout? Okay, you want to talk about the drugs and the trap. What happened after the trap? When you went to the feds and came home and nobody was fucking with you and nobody had nothing for you. A lot of people just tell one side of it. You got to tell the whole story. And that's where we come in. We try to give it from both sides, man. You have to tell these youngsters, man, okay, what happens after you go let off the 100-round clip and hit the innocent people who had nothing to do with anything that you involved in?
What?
About the mothers crying, about the funerals, about the people with no life insurance that can't even afford to die.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying, man? It's expensive to die, man. You feel me? It's expensive to die, brother.
Real spill, Jack.
A lot of these people don't even know that. It's expensive to die. So when you get an opportunity to get away from this shit, you got to cherish it, man. And a lot of people taking it as a joke. Now you get some money. Now you want to bring the streets with you.
That's the instant gratification part of it, you know.
There you go.
That's the part where, you know, well, this shit, I got this shit so quick, it really ain't no value on it. You know? I done got it so quick that I don't value it. You know what I mean? I'll just get another bag.
Right.
I'll fuck this bag off and go get another. Because you know what I mean? That's how I got the last one. Shit, you know, this money by the ton, you dig? So, you know, if you take that attitude, you know, which is not a practical attitude, you know, you're gonna move like that. But, you know, that's one of the symptoms of the instant gratification because, you know, they know you're going to fuck it off. They know if your mind ain't prepared to have it, you're going to fuck it off anyway, and it's going to end back up in their hands after they give it to you. So they ain't even worried. They select who they want to give it to, too. They don't want to give it to the person who's going to invest and do
man. Man.
Counterproductive to their plan.
And it's crazy because people have to understand this. When you're looking at street culture, a lot of artists we know, you know, personally, who were really out there, who really, 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 and they said, you know, people we talked to off air, you know, people we talked to on air, they were like, I got in this because I was trying to change my life to get out of it because I knew what was going to happen if I didn't get out of it. But also, too, when we look at it, it's deeper because when we look in American culture in general and society from when revolution happened with, you know, the colonists breaking off from the British under the crown, we've always had that anti-establishment attitude, no matter what color you are. And when you're dealing with it from a street level, there's always this thing about validation because of, you know, I have to show I was really out here, this, that, and the other. Well, like y'all said, when people listen to people on wax, artists on wax, they know who's really legit and who is not.
Right.
There's also a careful situation to understand that when you're still putting yourself in these situations, there is still, death is a very real thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and when you start we always got to tell this story. Of course, shout out to OG Bezel in New Orleans. We had him on like 3 years ago, one of the funniest ass shows we ever had. I mean, the way that the man delivered the shit was just so fucking gold. It was just hilarious. But he was talking about down in Louisiana about how, you know, he's like, if you say a man's name on a record, he's like, you got to go see that man.
Right.
Uh-huh. He's like, they will pull up at the spot where that artist is with a gun to the promoter's head, be like, where is he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
So don't go out of
off of Jackson, Mississippi. That's right up the way, man. You know, Mississippi and Louisiana right there by each other, man. So the culture is very similar. And Jackson is one of those places where it's too small to avoid the beef.
Right.
So if you say a name, If you really mean what you're saying, you're going to have to stand on it in Jackson, man. You know, the smallest place that you probably never heard of, but the most beautiful, it's the most beautiful most dangerous place you ever want to visit.
Look,
Ian has been there with me.
Shout out to a couple of my homies representing down there, Boo Rossini and Snoop 11, you know, from CTE, Corporate Thugs Entertainment. Got to shout them out as well down there. Those are my guys. Of course,
yes,
Trio Jackson, you know, in downtown. If y'all never been there, check out Trio Jackson.
Wait a minute. You talking about Boo spot? You talking about Boo Rossini spot, man?
Yeah.
Trio, yeah. You know, Boo my dude, man. That's my brother. Shout out to Boo,
yeah.
CTV. Yeah, that's Jeezy right here,
man.
Yeah,
great guy, man. Him, Snowman, I had the measure.
That's
a pleasure.
Brother, man.
I love him.
Boo.
I met Boo for the first time 4 years ago. I met Jeezy 5 years ago when they were here in the area. And I met and Boo came with him on the next year on the second show that Jeezy did here. Great guy.
Okay.
You know, all those guys are just solid. Him, Ace, you know, Snowman, Sheldon, the whole crew, man. So, you know, of course,
that's cool, bro.
You know, link with Snoop on IG. So it's like that whole crew, man, none but love, you know. So it's like, but yeah, you know, but it's something that I think a lot of the youth have to understand. And I think sometimes I think is with the youth out there today, they're getting so caught up in the impetuousness nature because youth is very spontaneous because we were all young at one time. So we did spontaneous shit just because. That's just the sometimes we are not fully developed understanding it. But it's also, too, as you get older, that is a gift. I always heard this proverb, and I've never forgotten it. Do not be ashamed to grow old. It is a privilege denied to many.
That's right.
So even when you look at how the music is being processed now in terms of how do we change the tide? I mean, we're not trying to down anybody saying drill is bad, this, that, and the other. But obviously there has been a very diametrically different shift from where it was even 10 years ago to where it is now. How important is it for artists to kind of take back the narrative in terms of really understanding the culture, what it means, and being themselves rather than trying to emulate somebody else?
You got it, brother.
Originality is a must whenever I bust. I mean, you know, well, we came up in a culture where originality was just as important as punchlines, catchphrases, and captions. So, you know, definitely, you know, originality is what gives you your identity. You know what I mean? Because we know you from your cadence. Like, you know what I mean? We know you from your what's the thing Jada used to do when he first came on?
He had a little sound he would make.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We knew Jada from that.
Right.
So, you know, these little things, the originality is what, you know, we knew DMX from the dog growl and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, originality, man, and don't be afraid to be yourself.
Yeah.
Being yourself is in right now. So don't be afraid to be yourself, man, because you could get a world something that they weren't expecting. You know, we already got the Dirks and the whoever else you want to throw into that category, man. We already have those. And you have to love them for what they are. And sometimes people get confused, like they want to run with what they feel is hot at the time. And it's not always about that, man. You could be yourself. And, you know, Kendrick Lamar is a good example of that. Being yourself, you can win also. You don't always have to go with what's popularized at the moment, man. You can be yourself right now and still win regardless. That's what I was.
Most definitely.
Yeah, and that's always
definitely.
And that's always important. People got to understand. Yeah. Yeah, there's no substitute because you're your own best print. Don't be a carbon copy of somebody because you're not fitting that blueprint of what they do. But you can design your own best edition. I mean, you know, as we close in on it, man, I mean, so the new project y'all got, I mean, in terms of, you know, what was it, what inspired it, and, you know, what are y'all having moving after this in terms of show dates and everything else as you all go on the press run with it?
What inspired it? Go ahead, Hindu.
Go ahead, yeah.
What inspired it, man? Hey, bro, just going through different situations, man, whatever life throws at you and surviving it. And my brother is here with me. You know, this is my brother, man. This ain't my partner in rap or none of that shit. This is my brother. You know, this dude came to check on me when my mom passed. You know what I mean? Like, it's certain, a lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about. So it's heavier than just the music. And it always is with me. It's always deeper than the music with me, man. And Hen is my brother, so we both here, and we both free. We still here, man. Ain't got a scratch on us. Why would we not put an album together? Like that was the mind state. Like why would we not do it? We owe that to the people. So that's what it was, man. Okay, bro, we in the same place. We ended up in Dallas, hopped on stage with Faith, did the House of Blues. From there, we came to Houston, man. Hey, we knocking songs out. The people deserve this. The people who've been rocking with us, like, hey, it's years go by. Hey, man, nah, we still fucking with y'all. You feel me? And that's priceless, bro. So me and bro got together like, hey, man, we owe this to the people. That's what the whole conversation is being, right, here?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I mean? Because it ain't never just been about us, you know what I mean? But you know how it is, man. This industry will break your heart when you find out, you know, what's behind that curtain sometimes, you know what I'm saying? So it's going to be hard for the realest motherfuckers in the world, for the people who really who they say they are, you know what I mean?
And man,
it's going to be like that, but we love, persevere, you know what I'm saying? So our love for this hip-hop is what, you know, brought us back together. So we've been rocking this whole time amongst ourselves. And
that's right.
Through all the shit that, you know, a young black male can go through out here in these streets, you know what I'm saying? Real spill, you know. I mean, we didn't get the fame and the fortune from our, you know, previous endeavors. But, you know, the one thing is when you love this music, you know, you're going to do this shit whether you like it or not. You know what I mean? And we got to keep our fans service, man. They need us more than ever right now. You know, I know they're so tired of jumping up and down. You know what I mean? And seeing each other.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing, man, because you all, if nobody else says it, but a lot of people have, we're going to say it on Off the Cuff Radio, you two are a blessing to the culture. Hip-hop is all the more richer.
Thank you, bud.
And,
thank you, bud.
And yes, you are very welcome. And hip-hop is all the more better and treasured with you both being a profound present to still give us a present with your creation. We're blessed, we're humbled to do what we do because we also, as this show, like to be the living repository after we're all long gone of a longevity to help tell the story and giving y'all the platform to tell a story. This is history, what we're doing here. We want to be honorable curators of it and being, you know, showing the respect that you all and so many artists deserve for what you have contributed because you got a gift that you gifted us. We can't do nothing but appreciate and love and respect that.
Man. That's heavy, brother. We appreciate it, man. Off the cuff, man. Hey, it's powerful, brother. You know what I'm saying? I'm blessed. We blessed. And shout out to Pittsburgh, man, for putting that together, man.
Yes, absolutely.
Because dude hit me, man. He hit me on Instagram, bro. Like, I saw his message. And when I saw what he was speaking about, fam, just, I had, you know, we had to reach out, man. We linked up like that, bro. Like, I see people speak on this pretty frequently, but the way he worded it, and I could see the love in it, man. Like, I could see the, you know, I could feel it, bro. It was powerful, man. And this whole experience tonight on Off the Cuff, hey, powerful, man. I'm glad we did this, brother.
Well, we're glad to have you. Y'all are welcome back anytime. We take what we do seriously. You know, this is us living a dream every night that we have a show. People that we grew up listening to, legends we've had, people that were known and unknown. For them, because one thing about it, before we close out, King and myself got to say this. We want to make sure that the artists, of no matter who they are, when they come on this show, that they feel welcome, that they are comfortable, that they're not going to be disrespected and exploited. Certain people, they run a clown show. We're just going to say it. And we don't do clown shows here. We do masterpiece theater of dignified dialogue to provoke thought and to teach and enlighten and appreciate. And that's our mission here. You know.
Hey, you deep, E. That was deep, E.
Nobody drawing no gun here, man. I ain't coming.
look, and nobody's going to get punched out. I go ahead of 22.
Hey, man, First up, guys are needed, man. The culture needs you guys. You guys are just as important, man. You know what I mean? And, you know, we don't even realize it at the time when we're making history. Like, you know, this will be played for centuries. You know what I'm saying? And, you guys are needed, man. You put the eyes and the ears on the groups and the people that you highlight, man. So, you know, I want to thank both of you brothers personally, man. You know, from us to y'all, man. You know, much love, bro.
Much love, absolutely.
No doubt, man. Yeah, we definitely gonna keep in touch, man. Like anything y'all pushing, we definitely gonna be supportive of it. And y'all definitely welcome again in the near future.
Yeah, you got that EP, man. You got that EP. Yeah. Don't forget about that EP January 1st, man. You know what I'm saying? Willie Hen and Young Malice, man.
On the way.
Yeah, you know, on the 1st, man. You know what I mean? 5-song banger, you know what I mean? And you can find me on Instagram, WILLIEHEN, at Willie Hen on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, you search me, it'll probably all come up. You know what I mean?
Young Malice, YOUNG_MALICE. Hit me up, man. I always try to respond back, you know, show that love back, man. Reciprocate it.
Definitely.
Always,
man.
Definitely love the build, man. We definitely looking forward to your EP coming out. And we know we're going to keep in touch. We're going to keep pushing that line, man.
Definitely,
brother. Y'all ever need us, man, just hit me, bro. We there, man. Believe that.
Yeah, man, line it up. Line up that show in the Carolinas. We coming.
We on the way.
Show.
We on the way.
Absolutely.
All right, y'all be easy.
Definitely.
Yeah, 100.
Thank y'all again. Yeah.
Man, 100, man. Much love, brother. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
Right.
Peace.